in earlier iterations of this apocalyptic confrontation of power with the people. And a brief pause here to thank the man who recently published a book on the Occupy movement. I think it has the word apocalypse in the title itself, for the information that the ancient meaning of the word. And whenever I hear people talk about ancient Greece, thank you, Martin Bernal, who wrote Black Athena, for the necessary reminder. Ancient Greece wasn't ancient Greece. It was an invention of the late 19th century. Well, 200-year period, say, 250 years, last 250 years, it was invented. The concept, the lie, the propaganda, ancient Greece. It was the great Mediterranean bowl. I was just reading, I'll tell more about this later, but through a series of one step leads to the next step, leads to the next step. If you follow your questions, it leads you to truth, because truth is singular. It is one truth. And it's from infinite angles. But you grab one. If you grab an authentic bit of it, it ties you to more authentic bits. And the more bits you get, the more you want. The bigger you get, the happier you get. So the pursuit of happiness is the pursuit of reality, of truth. States can't give it ever. So I follow my questions. And so I was delving into, I have to admit this. I think I might've been a teenager. I'm not sure. And I used to haunt bookstores or pick up books off the street. I'm not sure where I got this, but I found this really badly damaged book that somebody had thrown out. The cover was gone. It was water damaged. And I opened it up, and it was the title alone that grabbed me. Nothing else. It was called Utopia. And I opened it up. I could make nothing of it. I couldn't figure it out. But the word itself drew me. So I made this lovely, by my lights back then. Today it looks like a child did it. So I'm assuming it was a child. I made a book cover for it out of construction paper. And I lovingly covered it and wrote the word Utopia in flowery script and never read it since. And I carried this book from my whole life. And it's only very, very recently I noticed it on the shelf. That's my excuse for ignoring it for decade after decade after decade. And so finally, I somehow or another managed to pull it out and see the title, and I thought, well, maybe, wonder what it says. And it's still hard for me to figure out, right? Because anyway, that's for another show. So because there's all these different bits, and it's like, well, when does Utopia start, right? I'm just trying to, okay, no, that's not it. No, okay. And then they talk in this language even harder than Shakespeare. And I'm looking at it. I mean, it's like this puzzle upon puzzle. It's like layers of puzzle. I should do a whole show just on the layers of puzzle around this book, because it was written in Latin. And I thought, well, wasn't he English? So it had to be translated. I mean, those are puzzles, right? Well, why did he write it in Latin? Okay, why did all the clerks of the manors in medieval England write everything in Latin? Weren't they English? Why does it have to be so hard? Anyway, so I still haven't actually got to Utopia. I'm just, struggling through the preliminaries. Well, one of the preliminaries is this, they call it an epistle by, and I forgot the gentleman's name, but he wrote the epistle to Utopia. But And whoever edited this whole collection tells you in the back that the word utopia actually means nowhere. But we don't use it like that, do we? See how power takes words, concepts that are scary for it, because it might stir dangerous thoughts. And so it became something that could never, ever happen. But Sir Thomas More meant it in the way we would say, Nowheresville. So this epistle had in it, this is the one thing leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing. Well, it had this story I was trying to figure out about how someone named Diogenes was in a town and they were getting prepared for an invasion by Alexander the Great. I think it was Alexander the Great. And everybody's rushing around doing all these things. And so Diogenes lives in a tub. And so he rolls his tub up and down the hill. And someone says, what the hell are you doing that for? He says, well, everybody's so busy. I want to be busy. And I think he did. Well, what an idiot. Is that true? So I go to the back and it says that this is a story from Lucian. And I thought, okay, well, who's Lucian, right? So one thing leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing. And Lucian wrote in the second century AD. So he's writing like in 100, like 140 years or 50 years, say, 150 years into the first millennia. So he was writing 2001. So he was writing like centuries and centuries and centuries after Diogenes lived, because this there was actually is a Diogenes. And so I'm curious, well, why did Diogenes rule? you feel me? So my point is that I learned this week about this gentleman, Lucian, who's a Syrian and went to Greece to learn ancient Greece. And so, and he stirred things up. And this is my point about how he inadvertently became a leader by being able to bring fresh insight and stir the bowl. So ancient Greece was never ancient Greece. Ancient Greece was everybody in that big Mediterranean world, which included China and India and Africa, right? So it's like the whole known world. In this book I'm reading about Lucian, and you know, it talks about how the Roman Empire just unified the whole known world. So this is a deep, deep, deep injury class that we have been stuck in. And it blows your mind to read these guys they've suppressed, like Antiphon and Diogenes. And they don't want us access to these thoughts, these books. When you read Sebastian de Grazia's Of Time, Work, and Leisure, because I still wasn't able to find anything by Diogenes, because I wanted to find out if this was true. Did he really live in a tub? Couldn't find them, because I want to read the source. I want to go to the person who actually lived that life, his words. And so I'm trying to find out more, and then I open up and I realize, oh my goodness, he was mentioned by Sebastian de Grazia, but it didn't register, because we need these multiple allusions to start piecing together an object for our mind to work on, right? So one reference ain't enough. So, but what de Grazia tells is this great little anecdote about how Diogenes gave Alexander the Great some good advice. And in gratitude, Alexander the Great says, well, okay, what can I give you? I got to give you something. That was some awesome advice. And they were outside and he was a guest in his tub. So Alexander the Great says, what can I do for you? And Diogenes says, could you move out of the way of the sun? Now that's a deep line. Could you move out of the way of the sun? That's a powerful man. And so Lucian, he's a jokester. He's fun loving. So he makes fun of everybody. But Diogenes is a deep dude. I got to find out more about this dude.